It's recording right now.
How does it tell you that?
Little tiny light.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Shut off, so nothing's lit up right now.
Okay.
It's going. So, and then just I got to remember to get it from you at the end.
All right, sounds good. So. Appreciate it.
Good morning, everybody. More people might be coming in, but we all like food so much, so they might just be snacking down there and browsing the tables, too. So, we're glad to have you here. As you know, the speaker is and so if any part of this discussion, and if there's questions, you'll probably repeat the question because it's for the recording part. So, enjoy.
God bless you. Let me have a word of prayer as you get started.
Thank you.
And I got somebody coming up with your charger.
Oh, thank you so much. Very kind.
Yeah. Father, thank you for this time that we have. I pray. Thank you, Lord, for the blessing that Doug and people he's worked with for so many years have been. And we ask that you come here, breathe your life through words and concepts and ideas and thoughts that are here today. And speak to us, we pray, so that we may be better servants, taking care of your servants around the world. We pray this blessing in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Welcome to you in this workshop. I'm going to use this microphone because it is a little bit longer room and my voice is not very good. I don't know, maybe God intended for me to work as somebody's secretary or something because whatever, this voice he gave me just is a little bit raspy. So I'm grateful for your willingness to put up with it. And that's why I use this little microphone. It's not because I have illusions of any kind of grandeur. We all combat this business of sending missionaries through the local church in a different way. Each of us comes maybe from our own context, and I thought it might just be important to ask, what is your context? If you serve on a missions committee of a local church, would you just raise your hand, please? So the majority, two-thirds of us are on missions committees. And then if you serve as a missions staff person in an agency, would you raise your hand? So a couple, three there. If you serve maybe, if you're here at the college as a student, maybe tell us, okay, a couple of those. And then if you're interested in this topic because you might go as a missionary, how about that? Raise your hand. A couple there, okay. Did I leave anybody out? Is that pretty much every sector, every group?
How about someone who's been sent?
Someone who's already been sent as a missionary. So, all right, good.
Been sent, but now as a missions pastor.
Yep. Missions pastors in local churches. Very good. All right, well, that helps us know who's in the audience. I suppose the way I'd like to see us go with this is to make this interactive. If you have a question that you'd like to ask, that will help me a great deal if you would just raise your hand, and that way we'll know to stop. You don't have to wait till the end or anything. And then also, if you have an idea that you'd like to share about a perspective along the way, it could just be any comment or observation you'd like to make. Don't hesitate to raise your hand at that too. And we'll try to make this so that there are times for you to stop and consider your own context, your own environment, so that you can try to think, okay, what would we do about that in our context? So let's get going. The topic is choosing and onboarding new missionary partners with your local church. And I think probably we ought to begin with the end in mind, like Stephen Covey would have us say. We just need to ask, what's the goal? And with your local church, that's a good place to start. If you are in a local church context, maybe you're taking this back to your committee and you're saying, hey, I was at this MC Squared event and I went to this workshop about how we might start sending missionaries. And the workshop speaker, by the way, I'll put a link at the end of a place where you can download this whole thing as a PDF. And that way, if you don't feel like you want to just quickly write down everything, and you'll have it all in a PDF format, easy to pass along to somebody else, I hope. So I was at this workshop, and the guy said, we could do this as a church. Now, they were just a church of 75 people, or maybe 225 people, maybe 500 people. Your church might be larger than that. But what if God could use us to raise up somebody within our church? And what's more, how do we decide whom we're going to support? Or should that be who? I don't know. How do we decide which candidates are going to fit with our vision? And so what he said we should do, he suggested that we start out by asking, what's our goal? What are we trying to accomplish? Now, if you're from an agency today, I'm guessing that probably most likely you're looking at this from the vantage point of saying, what is our agency going to do when we work with local churches? How do we respond with a local church who wants to consider supporting one of our workers? And so you have to decide how to apply this if you're with an agency. But I think the way we're going to approach it in this workshop is if you're with a local church. So the second question we suggest you ask is, what should a worker be that we might consider supporting? What should that worker know? And what should that worker do in the field? Because what we are theorizing is that the doing of a worker in the field is going to come from who the worker is. It's going to come from the inside out. And unless the worker is authentically and genuinely a follower of Christ and pursuing Christ personally, then probably eventually that worker is going to feel like he or she has like the imposter syndrome anyway. And that imposter syndrome, which as you know is a phrase that's sometimes used to describe that feeling we all have when we stand up in front of people and talk about something or we share something but we don't really believe it inside. And that eats away at us. And eventually, we can't really deal with that conflict, you know. So we want to find workers who really believe and really are the people that we're asking to be for another culture, for another tribe or caste or kindred, a city or a group of some kind. And this slide sums up, in a way, the most important part of the whole workshop. Some churches ask these questions, and they decide that they're going to pick out certain values that they're going to espouse, or certain needs that they're going to address. I was with a church for about maybe, I don't know, 10 or 15 years in Louisville, Kentucky, church of about 700, and as a committee, I happened to be a chairman of the missions committee at the time. As a committee, I kept asking the committee, what do we want to do? What do we want this church to do that's different? What do we want this church to accomplish that hasn't been accomplished before? And finally, we came to this conclusion that we wanted to start a brand new work among some unreached people group. And this oozed out of what the missions committee had become. It just bubbled up from what we were praying about and what we were doing. So I'd suggest in your committee, figure out what it is. You might decide, well, we're going to start a children's outreach, or we're going to start an outreach to a pregnancy care thing so that we can help address the needs of the unborn. Or we're going to work with at-risk children. Or we're going to work with vulnerable women. We're going to work with, you know, something that bubbles up out of who you are. So if you get this slide, then maybe you've got the whole presentation in a nutshell. So I'd just like to pause. I'd like to ask you, has your church done this? Is there some facet of the world that your church decided you wanted to specialize in? And if so, what is it? Anybody? And I'll repeat on the recording in case they can't hear. Anybody? I know a church in West Covina area of LA. They decided on three things. I hope I know what the three are. Unreached peoples, I think they decided on, women who were maybe leaving, maybe involved, had been involved in sex trafficking and they were coming out of that, and orphans. That, those were their three things they were going to focus on. What about your church? Ever? Yes, ma'am.
We didn't have a specific place, but as we came up with, we wanted to focus on evangelism, equipping the locals, and then empowering them.
Super.
And working our way out. And so
the whole Great Commission in a nutshell.
We did end up with picking two or three countries that we did that.
Great.
And we're working our way out of those countries now. And looking, this is why I'm here, because now we're looking at what's the next step.
What's next? Fantastic. So one participant here mentioned, I'll say for the recording, they focused on evangelism and then equipping those people to be able to multiply. And the third?
Empowering them.
And empowering. Great. Okay. That's a good example. Well, like I say, if you could just ask your committee, what are we trying to accomplish? Sometimes this alone is enough to help them take things up to the next notch. Now, I'll just say a word, if I can hop out into a sidebar for one quick second. If you are considering going into missions, or you work with an agency, one idea you could have is, if I'm going to speak at a church, I ought to ask them if they have already done this, for two reasons. Maybe they will say something that I happen to specialize in. And when I respond, it'll sound like I made the order for them. I'll sound like I have the answer for what they need, you see. So it'll help you if you're approaching them for resources or for prayer, some kind of sending help. It'll help you be relevant. And then the other reason is, if they haven't done this, it'll be one more prompting for them to consider it. And after all, what are we trying to go after here? We're trying to help everybody around the harbor make every boat rise all together. For that to happen, we have to all reach a little farther. The whole world is never going to have the whole gospel until the whole church gets involved in telling the whole thing. And any church that sits back on its laurels because of what it did in a prior day should be sobered by the fact that JoshuaProject.net still publishes that there are 2.8 billion people that don't have a valid access, a valid opportunity to be able to hear the gospel. And to check me out on that, just go to JoshuaProject.net and see it for yourself. And those 2.8 billion, let's be bravo, not million. Those 2.8 billion who are underserved will never have a chance to hear about Jesus until or unless some local church somewhere decides to push farther than they have pushed before. So that's kind of why these three questions are important. Let's go on and let's try to think about, then once you figured out what's going to be your focus, you have to ask, so what are we going to change? What will we need to change in order to make that special impact? We probably won't get a new impact by keeping things the same. We're going to have to change things up in one way or another. So, one area, and perhaps the first area you might want to focus on, just a suggestion, is spiritual formation. And this would be spiritual formation of your committee members as well as the congregation. And think of it as spiritual formation as your future missionaries. You might have a teen youth group with 10 or 12 members who are teenagers. How can you help speak into the spiritual formation of those 10 or 12 teens So when they get to be 22, they will want to go into missions. The assistant that I have right now, she's 22 years old, just graduated from college in May. She began thinking about missions when she was a 7th grader. By the time she was a 9th grader, she went on her first short-term mission trip. By the time she was a 10th grader, she was organizing a short-term missions trip that she led at her church as an 11th grader. As a 12th grader, she took people back to that place. As a third-year college student, she spent the summer among a Muslim group that is completely unreached. I found her right before that summer and said, "Hey, I know you'd rather be there, but could you put up with being here for a while to help me make an impact on the world?" She agreed. This young lady is the product of a generation that poured into her. And now I get to be the beneficiary of it. And she made this presentation for me. You know, you could start working with a teenager that could become like that. But you got to start today. So what will it take? Well, it's going to take having good single or family wholeness. I'm just going to drop out of the presentation long enough to change that word from mumlamumli into fumlamumli. Make that a little better. Whoops, that's not what I want to do. Now I wonder how I can I go back in the presentation, or will it start me at the beginning? No, it kept me here. Good. There's no spell checker in this presentation, so I'm going to have to ask her to look really close, one word at a time. Single family wholeness you'll need. These teenagers that you're going to try to grow up, they will need a servant's heart. They will need to be flexible. They'll need to be very culturally sensitive, and they'll have to have a commitment to the church as a whole and a commitment to your church. So here's what I suggest you do. If you know that you want these barometers to be present in your teenagers at your church, why not, as a missions committee, invite your youth minister to come to a missions committee meeting? And maybe a couple of the sponsors that your youth minister works with, who are volunteers, and ask them to come, because your committee wants to speak to them about how your church can raise up missionaries from among your teenage youth group. And I bet you, 100 to 1, this youth minister is going to be so pumped by that idea for two reasons. First, because this youth minister has been looking for a cause anyway. Second, because this youth minister will know that if you're asking this question, you might likely be willing to pay for this someday. So you're going to put money behind this dream and help this youth minister take some of those kids to a mission field. And you know what? I bet your youth minister will be right. If your youth minister starts playing ball with you in this way and being very strategic about raising missionaries up in your youth group, then you are going to want to put money behind it someday if God provides you with some money for it. And it's going to be a lot more fun than having that money in the budget and saying, what do we do with this? You know, people are giving by their online giving every month now. It's coming straight out of their bank account. And we've got this money, but we can't do any, you know, we can't do things like we've always done before. How are we going to use this money to make an impact on the world? And so it'll help both sides. Spiritual formation could also be a part of your yardstick for the missionaries that come in and ask you for support. I don't know what barometers that you've been using, but it's hard. I mean, there are people on these committees all across the United States and on staff positions all across the United States, and they wonder, how do I know how to respond? When people come and ask us for money, I don't know what to tell them. I get a letter every week from a different missionary who's asking for support. How do I decide which one to support and which one not to? Is it that, okay, if they're from our church, we support them? Well, what kind of measurement is that if they're not really ready to go to the field? So what you're doing here is you're starting to figure out, these are the criteria that we're going to use to make an informed decision. No longer will it be based on whether or not the husband and wife held hands when they came to speak to our mission committee. We're going to be asking tough questions. And what you could do is you could take each one of these separate yardsticks and you could say, how are we going to know whether they're flexible? And you could ask your committee members to formulate a question or two about each of these barometers. Think about it. The next missionary that comes to your missions committee meeting, you'll no longer say, so, tell us something about yourselves. You'll no longer do that. You'll say, now, on the issue of flexibility, and then you'll ask this question like, if you are placed in a brand new village, how do you respond when they offer you, a chance to be able to speak as long as you'll eat their food? Or, you know, whatever question you dream up, doesn't have to be a say one like that, but whatever question you dream up, it measures these different criteria. And spiritual formation, let's face it, is the fundamental first step in making sure you've got a candidate, whether they were raised up in your local church, or whether they came and asked you for money, or prayer, or some other kind of help. It's the fundamental first question to find out whether you've got a candidate who really has the imposter syndrome, and you don't even know it. Are they spiritually authentic on the inside? And that's how you know that they won't rot from the inside out on the field. Now, that's not the only question that you should ask. It is the first question, I think, I would propose. The second set of criteria might be ministry skills. This is a very broad category, I know. So we're going to give several examples, but many of these examples will apply to every single worker that comes and asks you to partner with them. And they will definitely apply if you want to start with a seventh grader, like the local church did with the young lady who's my assistant. Her local church is a church of 80 people. 80 people. And they raised her up from middle school to do this. And all through high school. And all through, she finished 4 years of college in 3 years. They're a rural church. There's no city near them. They're out in the middle of the country. I mean, literally, you can look around their congregation and see cornfields on every side. But they cared about these factors. And I would suggest that you might want to care about it too. How can you help this person start to care about language and how to learn it? And give them a successful language learning experience. 99 students out of 100 that come to United States high schools have unsuccessful language learning experiences. 1 in 100, in my anecdotal response to you today, 1 in 100 would say, I enjoyed my high school French class, or I enjoyed high school Spanish, or I enjoyed high school Russian. 1 in 100. So what are you going to do to supplement that in your church? And how do you help that person develop the ability to adapt to another culture? Now, maybe you're looking at this and you're saying, oh my goodness, how do I know how to do this? Well, that's where you bring in books and videos and outside speakers. Now, let's talk for a moment to you if you're with an agency today. My goodness, how much we would appreciate it if you would offer to help your local church step through these criteria and prepare members of your church in these ways. And what a great service it would be to the local churches that support your work already if you could offer to help them do this and make it just one part of what you already do when you visit a local church. Anyway, you're already visiting your local churches. Just email in advance and say, hey, if you want me to meet with your missions committee, I'd love to challenge them to raise up missionaries from within your local church. Now, we used to have a thing here in the United States called ACMC. Anybody remember hear that? Yeah. Association of Church Missions Committees, and later they changed their name, Advancing, and I never learned the new acronym after they changed, but they became professionals after a while. But when in the beginning, they were just a bunch of people who were missions committee members trying to find answers. And I love that, you know, from the inside out, trying to find answers to this stuff. And they did a great job just saying, okay, where can we find somebody who can help our church figure out how to learn language when they go overseas? Now, when your ministers get this, in their middle school youth group meetings, they'll say, you know, they'll look at their youth minister and say, why are we learning this? There's nobody around our cornfield that speaks these other languages. Yeah, but we're preparing you for the time that you're 22 years old and you might decide to go and work overseas. Our missions committee is asking us to do this, so we're going to do it. What kind of purposefulness does that give them? Like, my life suddenly has a cause. My church is asking me, as a seventh grader, I get emotional just thinking about it. My church is asking me as a seventh grader to get ready for the day I'm 23. Wow. It would give them a reason to live. So when they get to high school German, they'll know why they're studying it. Because you've prepared them to look at it with a different mentality. What about evangelism and discipleship and church education? These are questions that as a ninth grader, I mean, they're not, I mean, with deep respect, the typical ninth grader is just not there. They're not getting it in their high schools, and Father, forgive me, sometimes they're not getting it in their youth groups either. They're doing programs, you know. They're doing attractional, modest stuff that's designed to try to get them to come to church. Let's have a Halloween party, you know. And we'll invite all our friends because somehow we think that if we invite them to come to the church, they'll, quote, get saved, unquote, at this Halloween party. What are we thinking, you know? What if we really equip a high school ninth grader how to share her story with her friends? And we equipped her how to start a Bible study at school. Now there is a reason we're living for, you know? So we meet with our middle schooler leaders, our sponsors, and we say, I know you cover a lot of things, so we're not asking you to change everything. But as a missions team, we're just asking for some time in your curriculum so that we can start raising up missionaries from our local church. Suppose you have a missionary come to speak at your committee or your team. Why don't you ask them, would you describe for us, how do you take a person from hello to a Bible study group? I mean, you are going to discover some stuttering people among your missionary visitors. How do you get from hello to a group? Ask that question. And see if it doesn't look like the deer that you almost hit last night in the headlights. Well, among Muslims, it's very difficult. Yeah, it is. So what are you thinking? How are you going to do it if we support your work to do this? Well, you know, some people work among Muslims for a very long time and don't have any response. I know, it's very hard, so what are you thinking? Those are the questions you could ask instead of noticing, did they hold hands, you know? The question to ask is, once they decide they're going to follow Jesus, what are you going to do with them? How do you help them to grow to the next level? And how do you help them start to reach their friends? Now, maybe you're afraid to ask that question because you're afraid it'll make it seem like that you're kind of intimidating them. They're asking for $1,100 a month, for Pete's sake. You can ask them whatever you want, you know. I have been in those meetings on both sides of the table. And I can tell you, the local church who asks me, what is your strategy for evangelism? Is a local church I respect. It's a local church I respect. I don't think they're being bossy or pushy or big shots. I think they're being careful with their money. And they're willing to invest it. And you know what? If they're asking questions like that, I mean, I'll humbly bow over and lean down as I say this. I am 10 times more likely to walk away from that church with help for one of our teams. Why is that? Because we have a strategy for evangelism. We have a strategy for making disciples. And we have a strategy for leadership training. And if they're asking that question, they're going to discover, I do not have any deer in the headlights look. Because I've got an answer. I mean, they can have a free book about our strategy for making disciples. And they can take that book home and read it to see, here's what team expansion does to make disciples. And I think there's still 6 copies left over on that table if you want to take one home. If you don't have the $10, just take it. I don't care. Just take it. Somebody else will give 20. And you'll see what our strategy is to make more disciples. You know, if the books are out, you can order it on Amazon. When a church asked me that, I think, yes. It's like I've cheated on the test. I know the answer to this question, you know? And I know what's working around the world. If you're talking to a missionary who doesn't, you might want to rethink whether you invest in that, even if they hold hands, if they don't have a strategy. What is their strategy for church multiplication? How will they teach people to follow the leaders of that group? And how will those followers also become leaders of others? Like ducklings, in a row of ducklings, you know, following a mother duck. What sort of training are they taking advantage of for interpersonal relations? And what are the professional competencies and skills that will give them a license to be in that country long term? How will they manage their platform so that it's real and so they won't have imposter syndrome for faking it out as a business person when they don't have any training in business? You've got to ask them those questions, especially if they're going to be in a place that's a difficult place to live. These are the ministry skills your middle schoolers need to start thinking about if they're going to have an impact on the world. And they can have a job that makes them good money while they witness in Saudi Arabia. And before they go, they could contact Team Expansion at teamexpansion.org, and we would say, what local church did this? What local church prepared you like this? Every day, I look across the table at this assistant and I say, how did you learn this? And she just says, well, it was a part of growing up at our church, you know. Wouldn't that be a great legacy for your committee to leave? For that worker to know that? Unfortunately, that's not all. There are knowledge goals. Now, I want to just make sure you understand, most people think about the knowledge goals. They forget about these other things that were mentioned. Everybody knows they have to know the Bible. And so what do? We put them in a class where they listen to a person up front saying, wah, 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 Hezekiah, wah, 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 wah. And they're just like the Charlie Brown teacher in the Charlie Brown cartoons. And that ninth grader is pretty much thinking about lunch. You know, we've got to think of better and more, challenging ways. And here's what I'd like to suggest. Challenge them to teach those Bible truths to somebody else. And then trust them to do it. Now that's radical. Imagine a 10th grader who was asked to organize, not attend, to organize the short-term mission trip. But my assistant was. She was asked to organize it. Now they watched over her, they gave her assistance, they, you know, constantly mentored her, but she organized the whole thing. That's what it's going to take, is challenging people to step up to a higher level. They got to have knowledge of ministry and missions, but you know, I'm just so sad about my Bible college background. I don't want to say it like that exactly, but I did. I had 4 years of Bible college. I majored in Bible, and I minored in evangelism, Christian ministry, and missions. Throughout my entire 4 years, nobody did what Bethany does. Nobody said, hey, what do you say we go out and do this together? Hats off to Bethany. Whether it's 16 months or going out to Minneapolis, St. Paul, to some downtown place for 16 days. I mean, it doesn't have to be 16 months. That's amazing, you know. But even just, nobody even ever took me out into the town where the college was and let me watch them try to share Christ with somebody. Nobody in 4 years. I went on to get a master's degree in missions. Nobody did that for me during my grad school. Why? Because they were all too busy teaching me content. Now, I learned lots of content, and I still have notebooks full of stuff. I'm really glad I learned. And if somebody says something about, you know, 2 Timothy 2:2 or Romans 8, or by God's grace, thank you for all those people that taught me all that conflict. So I'm not putting that down. There's a place for that. But I'm saying let's do that plus. Let's don't make it all about knowledge. Let's don't just teach them principles of leadership. Let's say to that high school freshman, now you're going to have to recruit the people who go with you on the trip. So what we want you to do is write them a letter. And at the commissioning, they had me as the guest speaker for the commissioning of the person who became my assistant. At the commissioning, an elder came up and said, I'll never forget the letter that she wrote me. I mean, I would have felt terribly guilty if I didn't go. They were mentoring her in that skill of communicating as a leader before she was even out of high school. No wonder she graduated college in 3 years instead of 4. So, yes, focus on the knowledge goals, but make sure there's a purpose behind them. And here's this intangible thing. Prepare them for the stuff that we don't know what they're going to do. And also, don't count out the person that we think is the unlikely candidate. Don't count out the unlikely. In some ways, the Apostle Paul, as Saul, seemed like the least likely candidate. His basic full-time passion was to persecute and kill the people that were joining this sect. Think about that. Would you, at your local church, have wanted to support him if he came to you and said, I'm thinking about changing and becoming a follower of this sect. Would you give me the money needed to go on this short-term mission trip to these 14 churches? You know, I bet your church would have been just like the church in Jerusalem. You would have shaken your head and said, who even invited this guy in here? Barnabas raised his hand. I'm so sorry I did. But in another way, I'm not sorry because, honestly, I think he's changed. Well, I don't know about this, Barnabas, you know, and they had a very hard time. So allow space for the enigma. The person that you can't quite, I mean, never count them out because you never know who God has raised up. If you are the enigma, I'd say treasure it. I mean, plus it. Two young people came up to me after the break. I didn't pay too much attention to them, but I remember in the back of my mind thinking, I wonder what, you know, the testimony is behind this guy, you know. And yet, he was the one who came up and had his life planned. And when I prayed for them, I thought, man, go at it. Go at it. We're looking for Apostle Pauls. People who are radicals. I mean, don't let your church missions committee be so, do I dare use a phrase that would have a negative connotation, so I won't. Don't let them be stuck in a traditional mindset about things. If somebody looks non-traditional, that shouldn't be a DQ. That shouldn't disqualify them for service. Field experience. Exposure to the cultures is probably going to be a factor you're going to look for. If I were to have been on a missions committee, and as a 22-year-old, I came up to talk to myself, I don't think I would have probably supported the work that I was saying I was going to do. I have no field experience. And as I look back, I think, how dangerous that was. But somebody, somewhere, saw me as an enigma. And I'm so thankful they did. But I'm afraid I wouldn't have had the courage. Because I had no cross-cultural experience whatsoever. Growing up in southern Indiana, talking about going to a place in South America, I mean, I would have just thought that was preposterous. And in the back of my mind, sitting back listening to this young man, I would have thought, this guy's not going to last 6 months. He's never even stepped foot overseas, and he's a team leader. This is preposterous. Somebody was willing to bet on me, you know, so yeah, the enigma. But the safer bet is to make sure I would have had cross-cultural experience first, exposure to other cultures. And mentorship from somebody who knew what they were doing. Now, eventually, if you're raising these folks up, there's a possibility you might want to team up with an agency. And then finding an agency that fits your church and your church culture will be tough. Because honestly, many of us, and now I'm going to use us and put on my hat as an agency leader, many of us think that we have answers. I mean, after all, we do this 60 hours a week, full time. So we think we have answers, and shame on us that we get deluded into thinking we have answers. The local church is the place God has prepared as his greenhouse for workers to rise up. So shame on me if I think I could have ever done this without the local church. We each bring some unique, I hope, please God, may it be that we each bring something to the table. But now when a local church calls me, I answer differently than I might have earlier as a young whippersnapper. Now I answer and say, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what is the counsel of God saying to this church? On August the 17th, a magazine asked me to write an article about Afghanistan. And on August the 19th, I got a call from a large local church saying, what is your agency doing in Afghanistan? What are you doing to help the people in Afghanistan? Well, we had two teams that worked with Afghan refugees and immigrants in other places, but at the time we had nobody in Afghanistan. But when this local church called, I said, well, what do you have in mind? It has completely changed my mindset now to think about the local church being the counsel of God for the world. And I would suggest that if you were with an agency, treat your local church partners like that. And you know what it does? It sort of restores dignity or something. And they start realizing, oh my goodness, so if I call you and ask a question about a certain place, you'll start being concerned for that place? Well, my goodness, of course I will, because God speaks through the local church to me all the time now. And this local church said, okay, if you're going to be like that, we'll pledge $50,000 if you'll do something in Afghanistan. Well, that changed that article that I wrote. I wrote about that church having the initiative to ask that question. Within 6 months, we had $455,000 toward this fund to start something in Afghanistan. Now, yeah, we had been working with Afghan immigrants since the year 2000. So we did have 22 years of experience, and like some crazy squirrel running around the bottom of the tree, if we hadn't found a nut by then, you know, 22 years, but all of that initiative started with a local church calling and saying, I wonder if the church has been talking. What do you got in Afghanistan? Now, if I had said, oh, you know what, we're full, we're too busy, I'm pretty sure they would have said, okay, that's fine, and they would have called somebody else, you know. $450,000 is the largest gift we've ever received. And it came from hundreds of people who banded together, partly because that local church was daring enough to make the call. What's your missions committee going to try to do? What call is your missions committee going to make? That's what you need, is that ability to find an agency to work with you so that when you make that call, they'll answer and they'll team up with you. And then, how will you be able to remain engaged with them while still supporting the workers through them? If they don't answer when you call, it doesn't have to be the president, it just so happens that I believe in answering, but maybe somebody in the agency doesn't answer you when you call, maybe give that organization a second look. And then, will you have the enduring resilience to stick with them when things go wrong? In the past 6 months, four families with our org have come back from the field for four different reasons. And two of them are joining our home office staff, but two of them are staying in the States. That local church that sponsors the work of those four people, it happens all four families in the same church, they immediately phoned and said, so how's your member care? This looks bad, you know that. Four families quit within 6 months? Tell us about your member care. Now, I didn't take that as a snub. I thanked them for the call, and I said, you know what, we're just going to tell you everything we're doing, and then help us make member care better, if that's the issue. I explained it. I sent them our complete guidebook on how we do member care. It's like 200 pages. They were able to read it. They were able to see, okay, in spite of their best efforts, these four families are changing ministries. Now, all four are still going to be in ministry, but it made us look bad. I value that church's hard question. And I'm staying in the running with them. This past month, they started sending $1,200 a month to us to be able to help us hire more member care people. They'll do a better job. And I thought, oh my goodness, this church not only was willing to ask the hard questions, but when they got the real answers, they were willing to invest to fix things. I love that! I loved it! I hope your church will be so bold and also willing to stick in there. So what would be your approach? You could pull together a task force or a committee, or you could just get with a buddy and say, let's do this in our church. It doesn't have to even be a missions committee. You could propose a simple plan. You could talk to your church leaders, get some buy-in from your youth ministry or whatever, and then just start. And I'm a big fan of starting something and adjusting as we go. Don't let the excellent get in the way of the good. Just go and get started with the good, and then look for excellence as you go forward. Get a win under your belt. Get a win under your belt. Now, I'm looking forward to March, because one of those four families is coming back to take the job as our coordinator for diaspora missions. And that guy is receiving the most emails from me in the past 3 days than anybody in our work, because I'm saying, man, I hope you're ready. Because suddenly there are going to be 1 million refugees coming out of Ukraine. And Ukraine has been a strong field for us. We've worked in 5 different cities. There are dozens and dozens of churches that have gotten started. And missionaries have come up. Entire mission teams now that are made up of Ukrainians. This has been a huge thing for us. And I'm saying to him, we of all orgs cannot afford the luxury of ignoring those 1 million refugees. There are going to be in Poland and Romania and all throughout Europe. What day you come back again? And he answered me this morning. It's March 3rd, Doug. I'm going to need 1 week. Okay, we'll give you 1 week. That's it for his transition. You know, 1 week. He's got to hit the ground running. I can't wait to look at that church that was questioning us and say, do you realize the amazing way God prepared this guy? For the last 5 years, he's worked with a refugee camp of 3,000 people. He's willing to come home and start this office. And on the week that he comes home, this happens in Ukraine. Do you see why things work out like this? I can't wait to say that to them. Because it's all true. It's all authentic. Get a win under your belt and then celebrate. And then rinse and repeat. Rinse and repeat. That's what it's all about. Rinse and repeat. Now, for you, you got to apply this in your particular context. Either way, you can go to the website, brigada.org/partners, and download a full PDF of this entire thing. Brigada.org/partners, I'll say that for those listening on the recording. Brigada.org/partners, and you'll see a link there to download this entire PDF for free. You don't even have to sign up for anything. But while you're there, I wish you would consider subscribing to Brigada by email. There's a little link there beside receive Brigada by email, and if you want to subscribe, it's free, and there's never a charge for it. People have been on it for 27 years, some of them, and have never paid a dime. If that's your driving momentum, whether it's free or not, that's what you can do. You can be on there for 27 years and never pay a dime. Comes once a week filled with missions resources and helps from organizers, helps from missions committees. It is made to order. Filled with member care stuff all the time, member care stuff, workshops, conferences. So I hope you'll consider subscribing, but either way you can download this PDF and you don't have to sign up for anything when you do. Now, I've left the last 12 minutes on purpose, in case you have questions, and I'll repeat them for those on the recording. Any questions you would have, this is your time. What questions would you have? Yes, please.
You talked about there what might excellence get in the way of good. Comment on that, please.
Mm-hmm. I bet that this is partly due to my personality. I've always thought that some effort toward a cause is better than no effort that thinks about wanting to do that someday and never does it. So, yes, the question, thank you so much, Jim. The question was, would you please clarify a comment on the idea of don't let the excellent get in the way of the good? I love it to plan for excellence, and I think we should do it at every turn. I'm really for it. If we plan for excellence, and it takes us 5 years, and nobody helps those 1 million refugees coming out of Ukraine, shame on us. They'll sit there in Romania and Poland for 5 years. And during that time, they'll all become convinced that democracies don't care and churches don't care for 5 years while we plan the most excellent refugee response ever. So don't think you have to plan it perfectly. Get a guy who's coming back from a refugee camp and say to him, here's $10,000 a month. What are you going to do for those people in Poland? I know $10,000 a month is not very much, and it's 1 million people. What can you do with $10,000 a month to help 1 million people? Well, go help somebody. So that's the idea. Don't let the excellent get in the way of the good. Good question. I'm glad you asked. Others?
It makes me think of something. We have a 25-year relationship with the church in Ukraine. And we just feel so sad. We had a 24-hour vigil. Our mission committee decided to send $2,000 through a mission agency that we knew about.
Hats off to you.
The church also decided to take a special offering. The issue has now become, we got it there right away. How can the church help now? I mean, they took the offering, but it's still sitting at the church. How can mission committees encourage churches to move a little faster?
Yes.
Something like that.
And it's Mary.
Mary,
hats off to your church for wanting to respond.
Well, I mean, yeah, I talked to the pastor last night. But
yeah, hats off. Send the $2,000 immediately. That was an amazing thing. And then to take the special offering. So the question is, we sent $2,000 by partnering with an agency immediately. We took a special offering. It's been tough on that offering because people are not sure how or what to do with it. So we're kind of sitting on it. And, you know, Mary's feeling this kind of torn because she wants that to get into action, you know, right now. And that's a great question. I can't pose an answer to that, but I can say that is the exact thing we were talking about, you know, doing something good, even if it might not have been something calculated, is better than sitting around and worrying about the calculated and not doing anything at all. That's kind of what we're getting at through that. So I don't know if there's any quick answer, Mary. I would say one easy answer might be to maybe go back to that agency and say, can you report on what happened with the $2,000 we sent? What kind of impact did it make? And then measure that.
All this happened just this last week, and so we've already, you know, and they do it electronically. It went to some place here, through an ATM in the city over there. What has been discouraging is how can the money that the congregation now wants to help Ukraine, how can,
yes,
what happens, and can mission agencies, or do you go through something like a government agency? What do we do now with the money that didn't get there and probably won't, given the fact that that city, this Kremenchuk, may easily be bombed. They sit right in the middle of the country.
Great questions. Obviously, these go way beyond the scope of this workshop, but what Mary is asking is, we said that this all happened last week, and it did go. They used an ATM, and it got through, but now that that city's maybe been bombed, now how do we help this money get through? It's way beyond the scope, but I would just offer this. Here's been our strategy down through these, whatever it's been now, 44 years. If you can't get help right to the spot, then get it at least close with somebody that you trust. And fortunately, you know that you can trust churches in Poland. If you happen to know any of those, or your agency friends might know some, those churches in Poland are now literally going out by that border and serving meals to the 50,000 people that have already arrived. You might not be able to help the people of Kremenchuk exactly today. But those 50,000 people are on that border with their 8-year-old daughters, and they're saying, how do I help feed this little girl? And that's something that can be done, and those Ukrainians will never forget it, and the Polish that you empower will never forgive you.
Talk about your assistant, and as far as, you know, all these opportunities, but how do you think they developed that, cultivated that heart to serve? I mean, as far as that, so she was interested in pursuing other things.
Yeah.
But she had to already be, there had to be that breeding ground that she was interested in.
Yes. Great question. The question is, I mentioned my assistant and how that had been cultivated by her church, and your first name was?
JP.
JP's asking, yeah, but how do you prompt that? How do you ever start that? And, part of what we have to say in this session is sometimes you just have to, recognize it when you see it, because you can't always figure out how to prompt it. I think this church saw it in her and just fanned the flame of the gift that was in her. I think she is exceptional. I mean, literally, I went to her university, and I literally said, I need a person who's the smartest person you have, who is the most gifted, who wants to go overseas, but maybe we can talk them into giving time with me as an assistant for a while, and she has to be available right now, or he has to be available right now. And the person literally said, oh, I know just the one. I know exactly who I'll tell you, but you got to talk her out of going overseas. And I said, well, I don't want to have to talk her out of it, but maybe this could be a way she can see her job growing. And they said, well, good luck. I'll get her permission to talk to you. And so this person just recognized, out of a college of 1,000 people, they recognized her, And I think that's what our job is as a missions committee. How do we recognize that and then fan it into flame? Because what we can do, let's face it, all we can do is set the environment into place. We set the tone. Now, shame on us if we haven't done that. But if we set the environment into tone, then we wait and see if there's anybody that responds. It's kind of like evangelism. We can throw out the net and share the gospel, but if the person says no, unfortunately, we can't force them into accepting Christ. It's the same with this. We set the tone in our church, and then we watch for radar blips and see who responds. And when they respond, we are there with them. So, well, I know we have, 3 minutes left, Jim? Good. 3 minutes left, and we're going to use every last second we can, but you probably saw that on my talk. I mean, now the last second. Any other questions?
On the topic that you just mentioned,
yes.
I think that's another whole topic that we can talk about, is we're losing that connection in the church of being able to, have our global workers come in and share their stories. You're missing the big mission conferences that you set.
Yes.
And change is good, and we have to figure out how to do that. But I think we've missed a generation of putting the heart of missions.
Boy.
I mean, I grew up at literally 4 years old having missionaries in my home and in my church, and I actually got to go to the dedication of a New Testament translation of that missionary I met at Ford when she was 4.
Wow.
But that's where I got my heart.
Yeah.
And so we've got to figure out, I think your generation is getting it. I think it's the generation above us that we missed. So when the older generation is gone, there's this next generation that missed that. And now we're starting to get it back down. There. So that's another whole topic.
Okay, so summing up, the idea is because of changes in the local church, we might be missing sometimes those good old-fashioned missions conferences that got that stuff in front of people. And the point is, we got to figure out how to do that in this context, because changes happen, and we got to adapt and embrace it. I think you're exactly right, and I don't even need to comment, because you nailed it. I mean, we got to figure out how to contextualize to this current state, or else we will die, And it's happening all around the local church. I think we're in our last 30 seconds, so we got time for one last 30-second comment.
My comment is simply, I have a 15-year-old grandson who I've taken to church faithfully since the day he was born. The world is pulling our children away strongly.
Yeah.
And to get to them now, to light a fire in them now, we have to start now to make sure that our children, especially our teenage children, are hearing
this is the other side.
Yes. So comment is, we've got to start with the teenagers of today. So let's pray about that. And maybe prayer is the place to start anyway. Lord, would you please prompt us as to how we can prompt others to care and dare to go, Lord. And please allow us to capture a fire that others can catch so that they will want to burn for the world as well, Lord. That's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you for being a part of this. Jim, thank you. I guess you can come. Yeah, you don't need the mic.
Thanks so much. That was great stuff. I think I learned a lot. Just real quick, please don't forget the blue form evaluations. Take a couple minutes to do it right now if you want. Or be sure before the end of the conference. We really would appreciate that. So from here, you want to go out this door and back to this stairway where you came up and go down those steps. And then instead of going out to the outside again, just keep going straight. You'll see a ramp that goes downward. That'll take you right to the food. And that's where we all want to go, right? Is to the food. So probably people will be moving that direction. You'll see where that ramp is. So follow the ramp down. You'll see it'll take you right into where the line is to get your food, and then there are actually two dining rooms. You can pick either one up, go in there, find strangers to sit with, or take a friend and sit with strangers or whatever, meet somebody new. So God bless you. Thanks for coming here. It's good.